It is.
Yeah. Did you make that spooky loop?
I didn't make it. I just borrowed it.
Oh, cool. Great. Yeah, Billy is working on bumper music all weekend long. I don't think I mean the guy never stops working.
He's a workaholic.
We're debuting the Radiance and Chocolate Hour starting on Monday. You know, with a different co-host along with Billy, and so we're gonna have all kinds of nice bumper music like that.
Sounds good.
And so forth. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Even though it's a rainy day, it can't get my spirits
looking
down.
And sounding better every day because of all that extra experience you get with working with Charlie in the afternoon drive.
I'm having a ball.
It shows. It shows on the air. Anyhow, well, let's start the show officially.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSVO Radio.
Do you think we get a bigger listening audience on rainy days?
I think
we do.
Definitely.
Yeah, because, I mean, even though people can listen to us when they're out doing things, when it's, you know, but they're more likely to, you know, tune in and have a good time on the Saturday special. So welcome to the Saturday special, ladies and gentlemen, and KSCO Country. We're going to be with you right up until noontime. We're going to have a lot of fun today, so stay with us. You'll be happy you did.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
As most of you know, KSCO is proud to maintain a free listener comment voicemail line at 429-2222. We do not currently charge a fee for this wonderful service, so long as people abide by the rules, which are simply to use the wonderful service to compliment, not criticize us. Now, if you feel you must criticize or complain about something or someone, we suggest that you call another radio station, TV station, or, best yet, a fine newspaper, such as our own Santa Cruz Sentinel. In fact, we have taken the extraordinary step to make this easy for you. Yep, because this Saturday, Tom Honig, yes, the Tom Honig, managing editor of the Santa Cruz Sentinel and inarguably the most powerful man in local media, will be here to accept your complaints. He's very good at it. Feel free to hammer Tom all you want. He's a great sport on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on You Can't Help But Love Us Unless You're Totally Humorless Radio, AM 1080 KSCO. Totally appropriate music for the Saturday special today. It's the special fanfare. Dave, you thought we might want to play the Crossfire. No, it might have applied.
That sounds fine.
Yeah, no, this is good. No, this is good because we have a special guest. Welcome to KSCO, Tom Honig. You haven't been here for a few years. We missed you.
Yeah, well, I'm back.
Oh, good. Great. So, listen, you've been Mr. Media for, you and I were talking, I can't believe it's 35 years you've been with the Sentinel. And 35 years. I mean, I didn't even think you were that old.
There have been no changes at all in Santa Cruz or in the newspaper business.
What a place. Well, what was the place like? I mean, were you new to Santa Cruz then, or did you grow up here?
No, I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Cupertino, and I became a resident here about a year before. I was traveling and things, and my parents had moved here, and so I was living here. And then what happened was I kept walking into the Sentinel office, and you remember, of course, the great Gordon Scotchy Sinclair, who was the editor.
Yeah.
And he finally hired me, I think, just to make me leave him alone.
So had you obviously been looking for a job in journalism?
I had, yeah.
So you
planned,
did you major in journalism in college or anything? Or?
No, I came to it late. I'd been an athlete, and I had played water polo in college, so I knew sports writers, and I thought that's a good gig, being a sports writer. So
that's right, yeah.
I mean, so that's how I was going to start, and my job interview lasted about 28 seconds was the day that Gordon hired me.
Uh-huh.
He said, I've got a job for you on the police beat. It's one you're not qualified for. Pays $150 a week. When can you start?
Gee.
That was my interview.
Yeah. And you said,
I already did.
Yeah. I did. I went to work that day.
Oh, that's great.
And for people who remember Wally Trabing, he was the one who took me all around Santa Cruz and showed me his part of town.
Prince of a guy. Yeah. He's still in town, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't hear too much. I heard, after the fact, I heard about a testimonial to honor, you know, Wally. I think it was at the First Congregational Church. If I would have heard about it before, I certainly would have been there.
Yeah, well, there was a book that came out with a collection of some of his columns. And interestingly, I didn't think they were the best of his columns. I would have selected some different ones because I edited that column for years.
Uh-huh.
And that took really special work. You had to speak the Trabing language.
Yeah, how do you edit a column?
You have to get into his brain, which is, I think, when you edit anybody, you try to get into their brain a little bit and understand that, first of all, it's not your own story. And second of all, you say, how can I make him look good? How can I make him? And so Wally just had a different way of looking at the world, and it was a special way of looking at the world, and he would make some very embarrassing mistakes, and he had moments of pure brilliance, and you had to protect him a little bit.
What's an example? I mean, can you share an example of an embarrassing mistake?
Oh, it would usually be a language thing. It would be, this is nothing. He would always use the phrase thither and yon, which, if you know the language, doesn't mean anything. I think you meant hither and yon.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And he was always playing word tricks, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. And, you know, and then he would have a lot of unintentional double entendres.
Uh-huh. It was mostly about people, the name of the
It always
sort of profiled some interesting character.
And it would, Wally had a way of finding it. He thought everybody was interesting. He had an almost childlike wonder, which I always thought Herb Cain had the same ability, where the rest of us get a little world weary. Every day was a fresh day to Wally, and I think it was to Herb Cain too. And I think that's a real quality of journalism. I think
we got to get him on. I'm usually pretty good with phone numbers, and I had his unlisted phone number once in 1976. And if it hasn't changed, if I dial that number, should we do that just for the heck of it?
And call him right now?
Yeah, why not?
Sure, see if he's around.
But what if I make a fool of myself and it's either the number has changed or it's the wrong and we're disturbing somebody? Well, let's think about it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, gee, it looks like we already have a caller here, even though we haven't even opened the phone lines. But I will give it, and now the second line is ringing here. 479-1080 is the phone number to call if you want to join in the program here in the Saturday Special. Special guest, appropriately named Saturday Special today, because we have Tom Honig, who is the editor. And I said managing in the promo, and I thought you were managing editor here.
Well, it's not a big difference.
Oh, okay.
It's
just, well, what is the difference?
I think the idea is that the editor is the captain of the editorial department, and the managing editor would be the first mate. I'm supposed to sit in a room and not talk to anybody and come up with great ideas, and then Don Miller, the managing editor, is supposed to go out and execute them, but it really doesn't work that way. Plus, also, I'm the chief editorial writer.
Oh.
In a lot of newspapers, that is a separate thing, and
I always figured that for as long as your name is attached to the newspaper as editor or managing editor or whatever, that you actually write the editorials.
Now, I do, yeah.
Personally, I mean, it's not a board or anything like that, or is it? I mean,
there is an editorial board with Dave Regan, and who's the publisher, and Don Miller and myself. But I, just as a matter of fact, I write most of them, and not every single one. We don't discuss every single one. We discuss our viewpoints. But you wouldn't have.
Yeah, and then who decides what the Sentinel's viewpoint is going to be? I mean, we it's very rare that you hear what we call an editorial on this station. Now, Kay, my mom does her commentaries all the time.
Right.
Okay. And in fact, there's a brand new one today, I think, right, Dave? Yeah. So, But editorial to me means this is the official position of the media, of the medium. You know, I mean, this is what the Sentinel believes, and it's our point of view.
I've been at the paper so long that I feel there's a tradition, even though issues change, and in some cases our editorial viewpoint has even changed. But I think there's a continuum, and I think there's a tradition that is worth holding on to, particularly in a town that changes as much as Santa Cruz. Having been there 35 years, I kind of know the Sentinel approach to things, and it's similar to mine, but it's not always exactly the same as my own personal view.
Right. Do you think there is no question in my mind? You tell me if you disagree. Okay, jump in, please. When I was growing up, and you know, I was born and raised here, so I dropped into Santa Cruz in 1951. And when I was growing up, the Sentinel was considered an arch conservative Republican paper.
Right.
Okay. I mean, no question about it. Right. So you remember that too, right?
Oh yeah. When I first came, although. It kind of was an arch conservative paper, but it also was a very timid newspaper, and the editorials didn't take really that much of a stand on
not things. A whole lot of teeth.
No, because the guy who wrote them, who we mentioned before, Scotchy Sinclair, he had a brain for numbers, and he was fascinated just with lists of numbers that most people would find kind of boring.
Yeah, I see, and it was right about that. I remember. Bruce McPherson, whose family owned the paper, his dad, Fred McPherson Jr., and his uncle, Dr. Malin McPherson, were the Santa Cruz Sentinel. And
right.
They were two-thirds partners in, along with Vern Berlin, as the managing one-third partner here of KSCO Radio, which stands for Santa Cruz's Own. Some people like to kid around and say KSCO really stands for Keep Senior Citizens Occupied. But, and maybe, I don't know, we'll see. But let me
point out, as far as the editorials, there was a pretty big change when Bruce McPherson took over as editor.
Right.
And Fred
I was
III. Took over, and they moved the editorial voice probably as much or more as I have moved it since the McPhersons left the paper. People don't notice that because it's usually incremental change, and you don't notice incremental change.
Yeah, so they moved it from the right more to the center.
It was the first time, for example, that a Democratic candidate was endorsed, and now we endorse probably more Democrats than Republicans, despite what people believe.
Well, some people... I believe that. I certainly believe that. In fact, when our family purchased KSCO, it was my vision for this to be a voice for everyone.
Right.
And we would turn cartwheels to have balance and comment. You know, we always had Rush Limbaugh, and I guess he is so strong and so politically right-wing that no matter what we did after that to balance it, we were always going to be branded and considered a conservative, right-wing, arch-Republican radio station, like the Sentinel used to be considered a newspaper.
Well, but we still are. I mean, and as Santa Cruz moves further to the left, Santa Cruz, you know, I hear daily, I must be on some list, I hear daily about how we're a tool of the Bush administration. I mean, daily. And... Maybe this.
What are these people on drugs or something?
Well, it's Santa Cruz, Michael.
I guess they are. Yeah, you're right. All right, you're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special with Tom Honig, editor of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Not every day you get to talk to Tom. Well, you're pretty accessible, actually.
Yeah,
I'll call you and you'll. Pretty good about returning calls. Right,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, I have my days. I'm not.
You're not in the mood for it. but today he is, and so if you wanna call him and slap him on the back or pat him on the back or slap him, well, whatever, you slap him around, feel free to do so. We'll have some fun here on the radio. Tony in Watsonville, welcome to the Saturday Special with MZ and Tom.
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
I was just curious, since Tom's been around for so many years, if he remembers at what point in time and under what circumstances the Santa Cruz Sentinel got referred to as Santa Cruz Senile.
That every newspaper has a name. You know, the San Jose Murky News, the San Francisco Comical. So every newspaper has that.
Got it.
So it was around from the time that I began, and the reason it kind of hurt was that as the town changed, the one I think real criticism that we had is we were slow to adopt to that change from an old time retirement beach town to a university town. Although I find it interesting, I think it's turning kind of back into a retirement community. The only difference is
because only retired people can possibly afford to live here.
Yeah, but the only difference is retired people used to come here because it was cheaper to live.
Right.
Now the retired people who come here are very wealthy.
Big time. And I wonder if that, I wonder if that was by design. You think that's by design? I mean,
I don't think anything's by design. I think everything's random, but
yeah.
You know, I mean it nothing went, when you limit the housing stock, the price is going to go up. That's not a tough one.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's economics 1A, whenever you artificially limit the supply of anything, as in housing units.
Although, having said that, I think it's also true. The coast, it's not just Santa Cruz. The coast of California is really expensive, the San Francisco Bay Area. Where you have a problem is in the affordability, because there aren't that many jobs here.
Right. It's essentially a prosperity-free zone. I'm going to give credit where it was due. Dan Garr coined that expression about 20 years ago or 18 years ago. And I just think it's Santa Cruz is supposedly a hate-free zone, and a nuclear-free zone, but it's also a prosperity-free zone. Anyhow, our next caller, by the way, 479-1080, if you want to join us here, give us a call at the radio station, KSCO, your favorite radio station, AM 1080. Margaret in Santa Cruz, you're on with Tom and MZ.
Yeah, I was thrilled, MZ, that you had him on. Thank you. Great show, I'm sure. I have a question. I have three questions, if I may, for Mr. Honig today.
Go.
Mr. Honig, do you believe that the first right of a human being, say like a baby, a child, do you believe that the first right of a child or a human being is the right to be born?
But I am not qualified to answer that in any way. And
okay.
If you want me to answer when life starts, I'm not capable of doing that.
So you are saying you do not know if the first right of a human being is the right to be born?
No.
Okay. Second question. Have you ever visited the website abortionno.org? Abortionno.org?
If I have, I don't remember it. I visit a lot of websites.
All right. That actually shows abortion procedures live, and including the partial birth abortion. And which brings me to my next question. You feel that the city council officially labeled Santa Cruz as a pro-choice city because partial birth abortion is the only procedure under attack in the Supreme Court right now, and they fear that every month there's 7 doctors from the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic Center that do 3 partial birth abortions every month at Sutter Maternity, and the city council is afraid that they will no longer be able to do partial birth abortions in this city. And that is the only reason why they claimed our city, along with 2 other cities in California, which is San Francisco and Santa Monica, they are the only cities that have claimed their city as pro-choice. And now we are linked cursedly to that label.
Well, you're here's my answer, and I don't think you'll probably like it. I don't think government has any place in the issue at all.
Do you have another question, Margaret?
Yeah, the other one is, would you ever do a huge story on pro-life issues, such as the post-abortive traumatic stress syndrome, the fact of fetal development? I mean, at 7 weeks, the baby's already sucking its thumb in utero. And the fact that the Crisis Pregnancy Center has a full-color ultrasound, 4D ultrasound, that is free to any woman in a crisis pregnancy center so that they can, in fact, see the living child in the uterus.
Would we do that story? Under some circumstances, we would not come at it as advocates either way, though.
But don't you think that's a major human interest story due to the epidemic of post-abortive traumatic stress syndrome?
It may or may not be. This is not an issue that I'm horribly informed on, so I'll have to talk to about others.
Okay, thanks for your call, Margaret. Harold and Aptosh, you're on with Tom Honig. Go ahead.
Okay. Welcome to the Grindhouse, Tom Honig.
Be nice, Harold, but make it quick, please, okay? Because we've got a lot of callers here.
Now, you know, I wanted to interview him and John Chown, too, if I could, and you, if I could ever get you to interview. But first of all, then, what I like about the sports department is when they do their research and get all these all-time teams and they do that labor, I really appreciate that part of the Sentinel.
Yeah.
Now, for the negative part, now, you have to know that I have a... I'm a historian, and I come from Watsonville. I lived there from 53 to 94. Do you remember Frank F. Orr, the editor there?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Now, he would print all letters to the editor. And you have that little thing up there that says free speech, free press, but then you selectively print letters to the editor. So those of us that have tried to print letters to the editor about the dark side of the Latino invasion, they don't get printed in the Sentinel. And I read more. It is because your background is Catholic. And so is John Chown. You want to answer that one?
Well, let's not talk about my own background. I don't see what it matters about anything. You don't happen to be right, but I think my own spirituality or lack thereof is my own issue.
Well, the big thing is Pope John Paul was saying no borders. And he told the priest in Watsonville, you have to help with this Latino invasion. And you didn't render under Caesar. And you put church above state. And what I've heard, and I thought I saw you say that you were a Catholic editor. And I know John Chown is. So that would make sense if you were. So we'll go on to something else then.
All right.
Now, what I wanted to say is I look at Santa Cruz as a tourist and a student town. The big student block at UCSC. That's what you are. Watsonville is an ag town. That's where the invasion came first. Overseas, we're fighting a Muslim invasion, and you tippy-toe around those two things. I'm just going to tell you about Watsonville. They have a huge meth and heroin problem, a gang problem. Cars and houses are broken into. Muggings by Latinos, 75% are illegal. And
Harold, everything you're saying is well known. What's the point of?
Okay.
Do you think Tom is turning his back on these issues and not reporting them, or what?
Tom mentions the crime in Beach Flats, but what's going to happen is it's going to spread all over your city. There's 6,000 or 7,000 illegals there, and a lot of times you won't say the word illegal, or you won't say illegal alien. You'll say undocumented worker. You play with the language, so it shows your bias. So you want to answer that. Because you're going to have a crime wave in Santa Cruz you will not believe.
We attempt very much to use language that is not going to be seen by anybody as insulting. The term illegal alien...
Well, that is too bad. That's not good. That's not good media. I want something with teeth in it.
Well, then there may or may not be a publication that is to your liking... But we're a publication for everybody, and if a large percentage of our readership finds a certain term offensive, then we will strive to find an unoffensive word for it.
Tom, you've heard this: newspapers are dying. You've heard that, and they are. Subscriptions and everything. It's just because you're playing to little tea sipping little old ladies to go to church. You're too nice over there. I want to know what's going on in this Muslim invasion and the Latino invasion and your crime rate all over the city. And
well, you know, what you're saying, we cover crime. Believe me, I know, because that's when we sell more papers, is when we have crime stories on the front page. I don't think we try to hide any crime. And yet the fact of the matter is the crime rate is down from 10 years ago and 20 years ago.
Boy. Okay, I'll leave that up to Santa Cruz.
Okay, thank you for your call, Harold. Here's Jim and Aptosh. You're on the KSCO Saturday Special with MZ and Tom Honig. Go, Jim.
Good morning.
Hey.
Anyway, I'd hate to be in your hot seat right now.
Hey, it's no problem.
Anyway, I do have a question and a problem with the Sentinel. The editorials are advocating the adulteration of the water supply, and that bothers me. I'm talking specifically about the fluoride issue.
Yeah.
Has there been an editorial in favor of that?
Yeah. We're strongly in favor of fluoridating the water, and you're not, and maybe you're right, and maybe we're wrong, but that's our opinion.
Well, your opinion, but what you're doing is adulterating the water.
Well, I'm not doing it.
You're in favor of it.
Yeah, and so...
Why would you want to adulterate the water?
Because according to what the newspaper believes, and actually what I personally believe, I believe the science is clear that more damage is done by not having fluoride in the water, particularly for poor families.
You haven't read enough.
Maybe you're right and I'm wrong, but that's an opinion.
Well, you're very wrong, but again, it's our water. I want some clean.
Okay, Jim, maybe we
water.
Need to do a program. I think we have done programs on this before, and we need to do it again because it sounds like it's a current issue again.
Well, it is. I mean, suppose we should add Viagra to the water because there are poor guys who can't afford that.
I love it. Like that idea.
Right, all the guys over 50, we're going to put Viagra in the water system.
Is that something you need?
No, but I think the newspaper needs it so it'll stand up straight.
Okay.
Now, Jim, you be nice.
I'm being nice. No, I'd like to be able to drink clean water without somebody deciding, I think this might help somebody, so you're forced to drink it.
Well, you can go out and buy clean water. It's not being fluoridated right now, but what I'm confused about is why you think that your opinion is somehow better than mine.
Well, it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of scientific
fact. It is a matter of opinion because there are a lot of people who don't agree with you, and the science is clear.
Well, the science is clear that fluoride is bad for you. That's just plain straight fact. Ewing, the attorney for Alcoa Aluminum, when he got into the public health system, was largely responsible for promoting this idea of taking the fluoride, which they used to have to pay to have taken to a toxic dump, now get paid for it to dump it into our water supply.
Okay, well, we're not going to change each other's mind, and I applaud your right to your own opinion.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim in Aptos. Here's Billy in Aptos also.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
I'm on Aptos.
Yes.
Good programming today.
Why, thank you.
Yes. Here's something that's not about opinions. The war on drugs, particularly on marijuana, you've been on the wrong side of this war, like all wars that the United States fights this way. It's the wrong war.
Billy, clearly you're a pothead then.
Well, I have been in the past, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And here's the problem with that.
Before you go much farther, I don't think we have ever written an editorial that said we're in favor of, quote, the war on drugs as run by the federal government. In fact, I think we've been on the other side of that.
Well, I'm pretty good at reading between the lines, and you're against medical marijuana. You got a lot of problems.
Let me clarify that. Was it Prop 218? I can't remember the number.
Yeah, me neither.
But we were in favor of that proposition, and we are actually in favor of getting medical marijuana to people that need it. What we're not in favor of is the way that the law has come about. You know, sometimes there are good intentions and bad laws, and I think that's where we're at on
that. That's what I'm talking about. Now let's talk about it. The facts are, for example, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the British newspapers came out with a scientific study based on the danger of all the drugs. Now, are you willing to tell the truth that tobacco and alcohol are infinitely more dangerous than marijuana?
I'm not qualified to say that. I don't think any one of them are particularly helpful to society.
So the half a million deaths that tobacco and alcohol cause.
Why is it
deaths that marijuana cause each year, and you can't tell?
I guess what I'm wondering is why does it matter? Alcohol is alcohol. Tobacco is tobacco. Wait a minute, and marijuana. The comparison. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because I'm talking not about the drug but about the law that was in particular.
Exactly the point. Just like the last caller pointed out, You know, the one place where the law doesn't belong is between issues about me and my doctor. Or here's the bottom line. You know, I understand the Constitution, and I ought to be free from not being hunted down and put in jail because I choose a different and less dangerous intoxicant than everybody else.
Well, where you're,
I
have no problem with what you said, but the fact of the matter is you're not being hunted down. If you want to sit in your own house and you want to be in Santa Cruz, you're not going to get in much trouble for smoking marijuana. So I don't see where your intensity is coming from on this. You're actually pretty free to do it.
Pretty free is not completely free. I'm almost 60 years old.
Billy,
I've seen people put in jail for life in Texas for smoking marijuana.
But they're not here, so...
Billy,
you know, I've never once seen anybody put in jail for smoking one marijuana cigarette.
Allow me, Billy, to make you completely free to smoke marijuana. Okay, there goes Billy. Now, Rob Roberts, the Rob Roberts, here with Tom Honig and little old MZ.
You guys got a real good conversation. Well, I'd like to applaud Mr. Honig for showing the cojones to come on this morning. I have a great deal of respect for him in that regard. How you doing, Mr.
Good. I'm fine. How are you?
You remember
Super.
Rob?
I sure do.
I just like to speak to something that you said earlier. I got a brief comment about the lexicon that's utilized in the editorial pages, not necessarily just in your newspaper, but in newspapers across the nation. I live here in the Bay Area, the epicenter of political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have one specific question for you, sir. I'd just like to know, why can we not call use the proper terminology, illegal aliens? And I'm just using that as one specific. I'm speaking in general terms of the lexicon that's utilized on the editorial pages, across newspapers across the nation. They're breaking the law. They entered this country illegally, okay? Why can't we call them what they are? I mean, if they're nappy-headed hoes, why can't we call them nappy-headed hoes?
Well, that's a value judgment on that. And as far as illegal aliens, some people find that offensive, and so there are other terms. So why would we go out of our way to openly offend people who take it that way? It doesn't offend me, but... So illegal residents, is that a problem? Or why is it so important that we use the word alien in your mind?
Okay, well, it's not necessarily alien.
More illegal, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, more illegal.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Michael. I want to, I think that you as an editor, and you spoke earlier about, that you have to reflect and you serve the entire community. I got no problem with that. My problem is this endemic... and pervasive political correctness that's sweeping the nation.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a fair concern, because I totally agree with you that I don't want to be bend over backwards unreasonably. And it's a tough call when you come down to language. You don't want to offend people on the one hand, but you want to be accurate.
Well,
you take a look at there are different mental illnesses.
Let me interrupt you for a second, all right? Because I want to address the point, as we go on in the conversation. I got no problem with that, Tom. What I'm saying is, let's call a spade a spade. If they enter the country illegally, and again, I'm just, talking about this immigration specific, they broke the law, Tom.
I
think that you as an editor and you as a purveyor of, putting out good information and being accurate and serving the public, if you will, I think that you have a commitment, to refer to them. They did break the law, Tom. They're in this country illegal.
Well, I have no problem at all with the use of the word illegal, and we use that word. So
good.
Good.
And I encourage you to do. Undocumented alien is an improper, I proffer this for your consideration. From my personal viewpoint. As someone that is a consumer of the product that you put out, that is an erroneous, fallacious utilization of the lexicon. These people are not undocumented, and I'm speaking specifically to people that do enter this country illegally. I think, and I proffer for your consideration, Tom, you have an obligation to the public that you purport to serve to use the proper lexicon, and when people break the law and enter this country illegally, that is, in fact, how you should refer to them in your newspaper. I'll take any additional comments off the air.
Wait a minute, Rob, before you leave. I know, I hate to do this. Wait, don't go. Real quick before you leave. I know you have very strong feelings about the IMUS matter that I want you to share with our audience. Real quick.
Totally ticked off. This man did nothing wrong. An apology should have been the end of it. I would like to refer anybody that's listening, you know, your audience, please go and read the Jason Whitlock column in the Kansas City Star. Just go ahead and Google Jason Whitlock or Kansas City Star. It is absolutely outstanding.
Actually,
Don
let me,
Imus,
you know what,
Don
there's...
Imus, yeah, Don Imus is not responsible for the state of Black America.
By the way, another way that people can find their way there is on, I have a blog on SantaCruzSentinel.com, and I have a link to that very column.
Super.
On my blog.
That is an outstanding column. And Michael, just, you know, I'm going to be real brief here. I'm going to talk for another 15 or 20
no,
seconds.
No, I want you to tell. It's in the news, so let's do it.
This man, Don Imus, has done so much good in his life. This is a classic case of how one R.S. wipes out 1,000 attaboys. This man has given millions to, you know, to charity. He has helped sickle cell afflicted children. And for those in your audience who don't know, that's a disease that affects the majority, you know, is present in African Americans. He has given millions. All the good works he has done have been wiped out. By, on the other hand, and I'm referring to this political correctness, as I, you know, previously alluded to, you know, that's, you know, Don Imus is not responsible for 8 out of 10 Black children being born out of wedlock. Okay? That's not Don Imus' fault. Okay? Don Imus is not responsible, okay, for, you know, the crack cocaine, glorification that's done by these rappers. That's not Don Imus' fault, okay? Don Imus is not responsible for the ills that are so pervasive in the Black community. That is not Don Imus' fault. But here you have these Black pimp race hustlers, Jesse Jackson, and again, Reverend Al Sharpton, hopping up on the stage and attacking this man, and again, you know, ignoring the significant problems that are all pervasive in the Black community. It is absolutely outrageous, but it's a sign of the time. So here we are, you know, we got an elephant in the room, and we're concentrating on the ant, you know, as Black Americans. So Don Imus, you know, I'm a total supporter of his. This whole thing was blown out of proportion. This man was dragged down and set upon, you know, like a deer by a pack of dogs. And it just goes to show how intolerant we've become in this country. So, I mean, what's okay, Michael? What can we say? I mean, we have people, you know, these rappers get up and use the N-word. Hell, I'm going to use the word because I'm a Black American. I can do that. Nigger. Okay, but you can't use that word, but I can. I can say it. Nigger. Okay, and these rappers use it all the time when they, you know, apply their terminology to our own community. They get away with it. Okay, but you can't use that word, Mike.
I better
but
not.
I
might get okay? kicked. I might get kicked out of the radio station if I.
Well,
say
Well, exactly right. But I mean, what's wrong with that picture? And before I leave you here, chew on this. You got a group of Black people who pay money to go see people like Chris Rock, Steve Harvey, the so-called comedians. They pay money to go see this, and then be insulted, have their race and their culture degraded for 90 minutes, laughing uproariously as they are, you know, depicted as imbeciles, stupid, you know, drug users, you know, prolific philanderers, and so on and so forth. So you know what? As Black Americans, we need to look inward. Okay, this is not Don Imus' fault, what happened. What he said, nappy-headed hoes, please. I'm sure every one of those girls on the Rutgers basketball team has got 50 Cent, let me speak a little bit of Ebonics to you. Got 50 Cent or Ludacris on their iPods and listen to themselves being depicted as nappy-headed hoes every day. Come on, Black America. Let's get real. Look in the mirror. You're a bunch of damn hypocrites. It's not Don Imus' fault, okay? We need to look at ourselves. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about that.
Thanks for a great call, Rob.
You know, I'm not a Don Imus apologist, but I'm just saying, let's not lose sight of the ball here, folks. Don Imus is a good man. An apology should have been the end of it, Mike. That should have been the end of it.
Well, okay, it ended before the apology, actually.
Yeah, really. I mean, wrong thing to do, Mike. Wrong thing to do. Okay, you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for letting me come on the air. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Rob. It was a great phone call, as usual. Steve in Watsonville, you're next on the KSCO Saturday Special with Tom Honig and MZ.
Hello.
Hey, you're on.
Oh, okay. Wow, I didn't hear a crackle. anyway, before I get to what I called about, I just want to mention on the IMUS situation at Sam Quentin on the Happy Hour show last night. He usually does just pure sports talk, but he gave a presentation on the IMUS situation that I thought was just very, very good. So if Sam's
oh,
listening,
wow.
that was a very good little rant he had. But what I actually called about, I've been listening here, and I've heard Mr. Honig kind of raked over the coals for being soft on abortion and illegal immigration, which would, of course, make him to the left side of center. And he's also his support for medical marijuana has been questioned, which I guess would put him to the right. And I've seen that in letters to the Sentinel on consecutive days. Either the Sentinel's editorial opinion be blasted as being a platform for the right or the left, and I would imagine that means you're probably a moderate like the other 80% of the population, and and I thank you for presenting that view. One other thing I want to add, I've seen the Sentinel and KSEO kicked her out, very hard by a local weekly paper. I won't mention their name.
Oh, go
with
ahead.
Cartoons.
Go,
okay,
go ahead.
Metro Santa Cruz and the DeCenzo cartoons. There was a cruel one about Kay and one, I believe, if I recall correctly, showing Tom Honig dressed up as a matronly lady in bed with the Red Tree developers. they've just reviled. They seem to try and find a reason to revile the Sentinel, and I've just been impressed by the fact that the Sentinel, to my knowledge, has never responded in kind in any way. And it shows a lot of dignity, and if you combine dignity and a balanced point of view, those are increasingly rare qualities in the media today, and I just congratulate you for providing them.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you very much.
Okay, you both have a good day.
Hey, you too. There goes Steve in Watsonville. Here comes Reggie in Monterey. By the way, we have open lines, believe it or not, plenty of open lines at 479-1080. So do give a call if you want to chip into the conversation here. 479-1080. You can also fax 475-2967. But if you send a fax, call us at 475-1080, the main station business line, to let Dave know that there's a fax so he'll go up front. It's all by itself today on the weekend here. There's no staff up front, so that's where the fax machine is. If you fax us, 475-2967, call us and let us know that you faxed us. Also, if you want to email, you can email me anytime, but if you email me now, then mz@ksco.com, by the way, is the address. Chances are I'll get it, and chances are I will read it on the air. So we've got Tom Honig from the Santa Cruz Sentinel on Saturday special today. Not every day do you have an opportunity to talk with Tom. You do today, so do give us a call. Reggie, you're on.
Tom, what are you doing to attract more advertising? I think your rates are really high.
That's what I understand, and I don't know honestly a lot about advertising because there's such a deep separation between the advertising side and the news side that it's kind of a separation of church and state idea. And I do understand that the ad rates are pretty high. And, what I do know about is the economics of newspapers right now, which are undergoing a major change. And how do you can't discount your way to profitability is what I understand. So I think they're set up in a way that has to bring in a certain amount of revenue. If you have any ideas that maybe haven't dawned on us, please give a call. Our advertising director is named Sharon Rink, and she's one of the best in the business.
Yeah, atrocious. In order for me to, if I advertise, let's say an 8x8, or it'll run like $500. In order for me to make my money back, I have to have at least two contacts. And basically, that's all that I get are two contacts. I understand you have your price, but there must be something that can be done to increase the advertising space.
Yeah, well, let me forward your concern on to Sharon, and feel free to call her yourself, and I'll see her on Monday morning. That's the first thing I'll talk to her about.
Promise?
I promise.
Can I follow up on that?
You betcha.
Okay, what time do you get at work tomorrow?
Monday. It's anywhere between 8:30 and 10:30, but usually around 9 o'clock.
From 8:30 to 10:30.
Yeah.
So then by 9 o'clock, you should be talking to Sharon.
I will.
So then when I call up at 9:01, I can talk to Sharon.
Oh, Jesus. Let go already. God,
okay,
Reggie.
Cool.
You made your point. Okay. Here goes. Here's our next caller, June in Santa Cruz. You're on the KSCO Saturday special. Go.
Hi, Lindsay. I have a question for your guest. Most station, I only hear it from one station. Very good news is that adult stem cell. If a person treated has a adult stem cell, even if they have type 2, when they treated the adult stem cell, they do not need insulin. That's your newspaper report that. I think that's a very good news. Everyone should know.
I will. I think everybody should know as well. So let me follow that up.
Okay, that's all. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, now Michael walked out of the building, so I'm left here. The guest is left on his own. And I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about, Michael, but I've never had the host get up and walk out on me before.
Hey, listen, I didn't think June would finish that quickly. Why did you finish so quickly, June?
I'm still here. I can talk to you.
Okay, good. I had to go in and make arrangements for the commercials to be played here. So.
Oh, sure. That's where you were.
No, really. That's where I was. I was because we don't have a little intercom between the studios. Maybe we'll do that.
Did you hear what I said?
No. You were talking about stem cell.
Yeah,
okay. And Tom said.
Adult stem cell.
Yeah.
They discover now a person has a type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Treated with adult stem cell does not need insulin.
Yes.
I consider that's very good news. I only heard it in a Christian station. I did not hear it anywhere else.
Thank you for bringing it to our station. Now our listeners have heard it too, June.
Oh, good. And I just wonder if they are sent a newspaper report that. If not, they should.
Okay.
Everyone should know. That's very good news.
It is. I would agree.
Okay. Good to talk to you.
Appreciate your call. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
That opens up a line at 479-1080, your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. It's MZ and Tom Honig with you on the radio here on the Saturday special. Give us a call or send an email to mz@ksco.com if you want to participate. Scott in Boulder Creek, you're next. Go.
Thank you, Michael.
Hey.
Mr. Honing, I have some time ago the Sentinel printed on the front page a CPS lie. And I believe it was by Robin Montelongo. I'm probably misremembering her name. But actually, they lie by policy under the cloak of confidentiality. I believe the government should be forbidden from posing civil suits because they have unlimited lawyers plus the system, in some cases the judges, and it's only under a preponderance, under 49.51%, whereas where I believe the government should be limited to criminal, where it's there's no reasonable doubt. Left. And I think that the criminal system can take care of these problems. If there's a father abusing their child, I think that they should be in prison or, that there should be camps. Because it turns out,
Scott,
that somebody...
You're doing a commentary. You're doing a letter to the editor now, aren't
okay,
you?
Michael,
don't you want to ask
Michael,
Tom something?
Yes.
Go. Do it.
All right. An earlier caller, Margaret, I think it was, mentioned post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now, it turns out that children removed from parents are 2 times as likely to suffer post-traumatic stress syndrome as Vietnam vets. I believe it does severe
damage. I mean, Scott, are you going to ask Tom a question? Are you going to ask him a question? That's what he's here for. Ask him a question, please. Don't give a diatribe.
Newspaper as a tool to get the truth out. So that we can, this terrible abuse, especially of children of color, and their statistics boast about it. that proportionally, although abuse is common with all races, proportionally.
I
think I know the case that he's talking about, and I think that there is an issue behind there that's important, which is that he's talking about Child Protective Services. Where I would disagree with him is, to my knowledge, Child Protective Services generally, like everybody else, does a good job most of the time. Like every other organization, they mess up, and when they do mess up, it's very difficult to get information. The case that he was referring to, actually, the Sentinel was the subject of a contempt of court by the late Judge Acow. And we ended up going to court to fight that and eventually had that overturned. There is a concern down in there where under the cloak of anonymity and confidentiality that the CPS is able to cover up some of its actions. But let me go back to what I said before. Most of the time they work miracles and they're up against a some big problems, and they do have a staffing problem.
Joe mentioned that the children are free to adopt from foster services, and as far as I know, it's true. However, to adopt a child, we all know you have to give at least a $25,000 anonymous donation, and to adopt a blue-eyed blonde, it's a $50,000. So you'll be paying for this child, you know, when he's in high school.
Jeez. Well, thanks for your call, Scott. We appreciate it. We've got 3.5 minutes remaining in this hour number one of the Saturday special. Let's go to Walt in Aptos. You're on, Walt. Go.
Yeah, Tom?
Yeah.
This is Walt Slobaum. You remember me?
I sure do.
You know, I go way back with the Sentinel. I used to...
How are you getting by, Walt?
Well, I have macular degeneration, so it lost my... I've able been to write letters to the editor.
Yeah.
Maybe someday you guys will come up with some kind of magic that help me. But anyhow, you know, I came over from...